Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, where we talk all about Lyme and beyond, because as most of us know, Lyme does not travel alone. I created this podcast to offer hope and inspiration and to remind you that healing is possible because I healed from my 13-year journey. Although it was exhausting physically, emotionally, financially, it truly was a blessing as it reshaped my mind, body, and soul. So, in this space, we have raw and real conversations with those who have reached the other side of this journey, as well as breaking down topics and approaches with different practitioners. So, my goal is to empower you, make you feel confident in being your own advocate. So, thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you're looking for more tips and resources, I share everything I learned along my journey on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page. So, now let's meet today's guest. She's actually a returning guest. She is such a wealth of information. She is so amazing that she graciously agreed to come back and share some more with us. So, my guest today is Dr. Mariah Hinchey. She is the founder of the Tao Clinic, as well as Lyme Bites and Lyme Core Botanicals. She is a speaker, an author. She's a busy woman. And so, again, I'm just so thankful that she took time to join me again today because we're going to break down some really important topics today. Of course, it's all about Lyme, but people don't know what to do sometimes when they get bit or they have a diagnosis finally, or do we do antibiotics? Do we do herbals? And why? Don't just believe what somebody tells you to do. Educate yourself. And so I hope that that is what you're going to take from this episode today. So, Dr. Mariah Hinchey, it's always great to see you. And thank you so much for joining me again. I appreciate it.
It's great to see you as well, and thank you so much for having me on again.
Absolutely. So, I guess let's start from the beginning, right? Like, not all the time do we even know that we got bit by a tick, but let's say that we did. So let's start with that. What should people do?
Sure. Yes, you're one of the lucky ones, and you actually see that little bugger on your body. I would say the first thing to do is don't panic. Sending your body into fight or flight stress response, definitely sets the stage. For worsening immune function and whatnot. So try to stay calm. And then you want to actually remove the tick properly. Okay. So this is one of the mistakes that I see. Now, I am not fond of those tick twisters and all of those various apparatus. I like to use a pair of flat tipped tweezers. And you want to go down all the way so the tweezers are touching your skin or the skin of the person you're removing it to. And you want to grab onto whether it's the neck, the mouth parts, the head, whatever you want to call it. But you want to get as close to the skin and as distal to that tick as possible so that you're not grabbing onto the body. Because if you grab it by the body, the tweezers are going to slip and you're likely to tear the tick in half. So once you get it in the right spot, you want to actually just hold with steady pressure and you'll see kind of like tenting of the skin. So when you grasp it, you want to see the skin kind of like coming up like this. And then you just hold and you count. Sometimes to 60 seconds, sometimes to around 100 seconds, and then all of a sudden the tick lets go and comes out. We don't want to be yanking, pulling. We just want to hold a steady force as close to the mouth parts as possible until the tick releases. Now, one of the reasons is the spirochetes that cause Lyme disease, that bacteria actually migrates from the hind gut of the tick to its salivary glands. And then that is where it's being basically pumped into the body. And if you're lucky enough to catch the tick early, where it has not mobilized from the hind gut to the salivary glands, because that does take time. And if the tick hasn't been previously fed, then you are likely that the infectious organism isn't in the salivary glands yet. And when it put its chemicals into your body to anesthetize you and thin your blood, that the spirochetes weren't there yet. So if you agitate that tick, if you're playing around with it, twisting it around, if you try to suffocate it or put Vaseline or alcohol or burn it or do any of these weird things that I've heard and actually witnessed when I was a kid, you will upset the tick and it will basically regurgitate its contents into you, making it more likely that you get those pathogens versus if you just very gently are able to remove it. So step one, number one, proper removal of that tick. And it is really important. Once you get the tick off, put it in a plastic Ziploc bag. Don't flush it. Don't throw it away. Don't do anything else with it. Don't let it crawl away while you're tending to the bite. Put it in a Ziploc bag. Then you want to clean the wound. So you can clean it with soap and water, you can clean it with alcohol, you can clean it with hydrogen peroxide, or all of the above. And then I have people make a little mixture of bentonite clay and an herb called Andrographis, which has some antispirochetal properties to it. And I have them put that on the bite because the bentonite clay has drawing action. And so, if we can kind of draw back out any of the saliva chemicals and organisms that the tick has put into you, it potentially, theoretically could be helpful. And then I have my patient soak that cotton ball in Andrographis and either put it over it with a piece of tape or with a Band-Aid so that we are topically, we're getting transdermal penetration of Andrographis to that bite site because it has direct antispirochetal actions.
End of show. No.
So, that's a
That was
start, but
perfect.
that's
I mean,
just the start.
that start, yes, that is just a start, and we're going to dive into the next step. But I must say that, there are a lot of those little tools that you twist and turn. I prefer using tweezers. Not that I've had to pull one out of me, right? But that would, in theory, be how I did it. I have never heard kind of let it release itself. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So, thank you for sharing
You're
that. That
welcome.
is amazing information.
Yeah, the mouthpieces are almost like at the bottom of the fish hook. Like it has that little sort of like barb. You know what I mean? So, like, you
Right.
again, like you have to get it to kind of like release itself, or you're just like ripping against like all of these barbs on the mouthpiece.
Yeah, and then more chance of tearing the tick
Yep.
and, having half of it stuck in you. So, oh my gosh, great, great, great tip for that.
Okay.
Okay, so then what's the next biggest thing, right? People sometimes jump to antibiotics. Should we test the tick? Should we, what
Yes.
should we do?
So step number two after that tick is out and you've cleaned the bite site and you've got it soaking in Andrographis is you want to actually send the tick out to be tested. This becomes very, very important because you can find out what pathogens that tick contained, and then you know what pathogens you could have potentially acquired from that tick bite. And why this matters is because testing your body takes time. We don't produce an antibody response immediately. And the most standard tests out there, which are flawed in their own right, and maybe if we have time, we'll talk about that. But if you're using a test that's measuring the immune response or the antibody production, it can actually take weeks before you have detectable antibody levels that would show up as positive on a test. And by that point, you have missed your treatment window. So that's one reason why knowing what that tick had was important because, a lot of the ticks that we send out to get tested come back clean. They don't have any pathogens. And it is not okay, in my opinion, to take antibiotics needlessly. And if that tick doesn't have anything and it didn't give you anything, now that would be a needless course of antibiotics.
Right.
So we can send the tick out. We can know, does it have Borrelia? Does it have Babesia? Does it have Bartonella? Does it have Ehrlichia, Anaplasma, Powassan virus, Rickettsia, et cetera? I send my ticks to tickreport.com. I like to use what I know and what I'm comfortable with.
Right.
And I've had patients send ticks out to other labs and then be told that the tick was negative and go on to develop an EM rash at the site of the bite, which we know is diagnostic of
Right.
Lyme disease. So, like anything else out there, the test that you're using matters. Okay, so
Right.
I like tickreport.com. I get it. I usually will FedEx it overnight. I want it there immediately. They're great. They get your results back to you. They guarantee 72 hours. Most of the time, it's within 48 hours. Okay,
Perfect.
so then
Now,
you.
as far as that, is there, because I know when sometimes people look through an Igenix lab slip, they're like, it's so overwhelming. There's so many options to choose from, right? So, what about tick testing? Is it just kind of all one and done? You just mark the box, check this tick, or do you have to choose some options? And is there any guidance you can give us on that?
Yes, there's a couple options. So one is you can do their basic, I think it's $50, or you can do the one where they test for everything that they have the capability to test for 200. And I honestly think it's the best $200 that one could ever spend. It's either
Okay.
$200 for peace of mind, or it's $200 to know exactly what organisms you could be potentially dealing with. And then knowing the tool, right, to be able to prevent. Because when it comes to antibiotics, let's say you become symptomatic and you go on doxycycline. Well, doxycycline isn't going to treat Babesia. Doxycycline is an antibiotic. So it might give you coverage for Borrelia, for Anaplasma, for Ehrlichia, maybe Bartonella, but it is not going to address Babesia. For Babesia, you need to use antiparasitic medications. Typically, for acute Babesia, it's a combination of atovaquone along with an antibiotic. And yes, I did say antibiotic, which might not make sense after what I just said, but it's typically paired with azithromycin. And that's kind of like the standard treatment for acute Babesia, not chronic, but acute. Can be used in a
Right.
chronic.
Yeah.
What I recommend is as soon as you get that tick in the bag, you start herbs. And
Okay.
so taking herbs that are anti-spirochetal, anti-parasitic, anti-plasmodial, antiviral, right? We have herbs that have these amazing antimicrobial functions that actually have been studied, and they've been studied against doxycycline and cefuroxime, two of the, kind of mainstream antibiotics used to treat Lyme disease. And they have performed just as well, but they've actually even gone after some of the persister cells that these antibiotics don't take care of. So I will typically put patients on a combination of antimicrobials that are antiviral, antiparasitic, and antibacterial. Some of my favorites are Cryptolepis, Sweet Annie, and Black Walnut. Then I will put patients on herbs that are going to inhibit the pro-inflammatory cytokine cascade, because that is what these infections sort of ignite in the body, so they can actually live and move throughout the body, break down the extracellular matrix, and feed themselves. We can inhibit these cytokines using Japanese knotweed, Chinese skullcap, and cordyceps. And then, if we know that Borrelia specifically uses our own enzymes against us, so it actually increases agarokinase, hyaluronidase, and collagenase. And that helps to break down the connective tissue and the collagen so that these organisms can spread through the skin, spread down through the blood vessels into the extracellular matrix, get into the joints and things like that, where it robs our collagen and feeds itself. So we can actually inhibit those enzymes using a combination, again, Japanese knotweed, Chinese skullcap, but this time ashwagandha. And then ashwagandha also helps to protect the adrenals in times of chronic stress, like if an infection were to turn chronic, but also helps to balance the immune system and keep its balance. So, just by using a combination of those herbs, you can really decrease the ability of the organism to spread and feed. And then you're also getting the antimicrobial actions and also helping host immunity.
I love that. So, yeah, because a lot of times we think, okay, go immediately to the doctor and get on antibiotics, right? There's a time and place for that, and you can choose what you want to do. But I think there's a lot of misconception on what should you do. And so let's test the tick, right? But in the meantime, to be safe, because these herbs are not going to destroy our gut, right? A lot of antibiotics do, right? There's no need to go to the doctor and get an antibiotic. Let's start with some basic herbs to kind of jumpstart the, or downstart, however you want to look at it, right?
Both jumpstart the immune system, downstart the replication of the
Yes,
bacteria or
exactly.
parasites.
Right. And so then that way you are kind of on top of the game. And again, going back to the price of the tick testing, $200, I completely agree with you. So many people spend thousands of dollars to get testing when they think that they may have Lyme disease. And could you imagine just paying $200, doing some herbs, and then getting the report back saying the tick was, clear. There's nothing in this tick.
There's no better feeling. It's happened to
That
me. It's happened to multiple family
peace of
members.
mind is priceless, is truly priceless. And then we also know what we need to treat, what we could possibly be infected with. And that, again, is there's certain things that you use for certain co-infections, and we need to kind of know what we need to attack. So that is fabulous.
So once we know what the tick comes back positive for, then you can make your decision. You can evaluate based off of have any symptoms started? Was the tick fed? So was it partially fed? Was it engorged? Do we have any idea how long the tick was on the body? I mean, there's so many different factors to take into consideration, but at least now you know, okay, that tick had babesia. So now your doctor knows, okay, I need to put you on an anti-babesial protocol, not just on doxycycline. Right. Or God forbid it has multiple things there, then that's going to take a multi-pharmaceutical medicine approach to achieve the goals that we're looking for. We can't just slap doxy on it and say, okay, we're good, we're covered. Now, of course, being who I am and what I do, I'm a naturopathic doctor. Herbal medicine is my medicine, and I have the utmost respect for our microbiome and our gut because we can't have a functioning immune system if we don't have, a balanced microbiome and a healthy gut. So I want to always do the least harm as possible. Number one, but number two, even if we're going to go the pharmaceutical route, which might be the best bet for the, for this imaginary individual that we're talking about, but we can stay on the herbs to modulate the immune system, to modulate the inflammatory cytokine cascade, to shut down those enzymes, and also to prevent the formation of these persister cells. And by the way, biofilm. I know everyone that knows anything about Lyme has heard the term biofilm, and you would be amazed at how quickly these little buggers start making biofilms to hide behind in the body. And antibiotics don't address biofilms, herbs do. So, again, I'm not saying use herbs and not antibiotics necessarily, but when you're using both of them together, you really get this beautiful synergy where it's not just kill, kill, kill. You're doing all of the other important things, including breaking down the biofilm so that the medications actually can kill it.
Yes. Okay. So, a couple questions for you. Many people want to just go in and kill, kill, kill. There's so many other layers to this journey than just that, and a lot of them are even more important than that, I believe. So, when we're talking about biofilms, because they are really hard to break down, I was not aware that they create them as quickly as you're making it sound. So my question is, my belief, not being a practitioner, just a patient, right? My belief is that antibiotics can also create these biofilms, or not the antibiotics create them themselves. But when you take antibiotics, all these pathogens are like, oh, we don't like this. Let's run and hide. Let's go create biofilms and hide behind it. Is that a true statement that I've been sharing? Because I feel that that's one of the negative things of taking an antibiotic, because it will make them go run and hide.
Yeah. So here's my understanding. Okay. Yes, taking antibiotics makes them go run and hide. They're going to make the biofilm either way. So I do not know everything. I will be the first person to admit that. I don't know necessarily that antibiotic use increases like the production or formation of biofilm, but what I do know is taking the antibiotics, they recognize or realize like what is killing them, like as a species, and through pleomorphic changes, they will change out of the form that is being attacked by that particular antibiotic, and they will change into a form. So, for example, going from the intracellular form that doxy is good at getting, when they realize that, then they will actually turn into the round body or the cyst form, which doxycycline cannot get after. And so for the cyst form or the round body form, you would need to take a drug called tinidazole, or Flagyl, another pharmaceutical drug, is good at getting at the cyst form. Now, in the botanical world, we use grapefruit seed extract. So there was a study done that showed that grapefruit seed extract agitated the cyst form or the round body and made them kind of come out of it and go back into either the motile form or the intracellular form.
Perfect. Yeah. And that is, thank you for that explanation. So a little bit of both, right? Whether they hide it, we just, the worst thing we want to do is allow them to build all these little colonized little cysts in our body, because I feel that, there's some practitioners out there that will say, oh, you can cure Lyme disease. Don't know. That's a whole nother episode, I believe, right?
Yeah, you'll never hear me
because,
use that word.
and I love
You need
that. I,
proof to use that word, as far as I'm concerned. Oncologists don't run
absolutely.
around saying, oh, I've cured your cancer, right? Because they can't
Right.
prove it. They get it into
Right.
remission.
I completely agree. And the practitioners that say, oh, I've got this, one and all cure for you, run as fast
Run.
as you can. I mean, it's a true fact. But so we definitely don't want to allow our body to build up on these things, because it does go in remission. And I believe that that's where they kind of lie and hide back behind there. And I know that I've had experience of just pulling a muscle, and then all of a sudden, why is this muscle not really healing? And come to find out, I had some little boogers hiding back behind that muscle that got torn open. And so it's really important to constantly, I feel, even being in remission, like Cystis tea is one of my favorite things. And it's a biofilm buster. And so I just drink a cup every day, right? Like it's an antimicrobial. It
It's
has
not
all
going to
these
hurt you.
amazing benefits for it. So why not? Because I don't ever want to go down that road again, right? So, okay. So now when it comes to, let's say, chronic Lyme, right? So there's, I think, still a lot of people out there, and I myself was one of them when I started this journey, is that when I grew up, my mom took me to the doctor and I took a pill or an antibiotic and I went home, and most of the time I just was okay. And that is kind of the theory that a lot of us believe in. And had it not been for being gaslit for 7 years, I probably would still be in that world of Western medicine. Don't want to ever dog them, right? I believe that there's a time and place for everything.
Absolutely.
But it was my journey that turned me into the world that you're in, Dr. Henty, because it's amazing. But we don't know what we don't know. And I know, I'm in a lot of the social media platforms out there, and I see so many people just talking about, oh, you have to have antibiotics. You have to do antibiotics. You must do antibiotics. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but what I'm saying, I'm always about, be your own advocate. Don't do what a doctor tells you must do, or what somebody tells you online that you must do. We must educate ourselves. And so I'd really love it if you could kind of break down what we do if, and most of us do have chronic Lyme because we can't get an accurate testing or an accurate diagnosis in time, right? So now it's in us. It's not just in that acute form. And so now we need to make a decision. Do we want to go the antibiotic route or the herbal route or both? And so I know that you've had a lot of experience with both sides of it, right? So I'd love it if you could just break down for the listeners maybe the pros, the cons of antibiotics, the pros of herbals. Are there any cons of herbals? Kind of just so that they can educate themselves with information and decide what is right for them.
Right. So, I mean, I'll start out by saying obviously I'm totally biased in my answer. But I will give you a little bit of the backstory. I didn't come into this biased as a naturopathic doctor. And by the way, I never wanted to treat Lyme disease. But when you're trained to be the doctor that acts as a detective and get to the root cause of the symptoms, and you keep finding Lyme disease or Babesia or Bartonella or, any of these vector-borne diseases as that underlying cause, for me, it's like if I'm going to do something, I need to do it right. And so that really sent me almost 20 years ago to ILADS, the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, to their organization, to their conferences. And when I first, I mean, there's more of a story than I think I have time to get into. But I did come out of school Lyme literate because of an experience that I had with a young woman in clinic that I was taking care of that had chronic Lyme and Babesia. And I'll leave that story at that. But in the beginning, I was very good at diagnosing tick-borne disease, especially in people who were misdiagnosed and told they had atypical MS, right? Or they had lupus or Sjogren's, but they didn't even have a positive ANA. Just like all of these weird things, like, okay, like the diagnostic criteria isn't there and it's there for a reason. So what else is going on? So I spent several years just diagnosing and referring to a Lyme literate practitioner for triple antibiotic therapy, which is really what I believed was necessary. I'm going to try to make this a short story. Then I myself ended up being diagnosed with Lyme, Babesia, Bartonella, Mycoplasma, and Chlamydia pneumoniae. And a lot of this stuff I had had, probably from when I got Lyme at 10, and it was a botched case. They tested me like on day three, told me I was negative, stopped the antibiotics, and I went on to develop what I now know because it's one of the things that I specialize in, ended up with PANS. Total, yes. And but it was explained away as hormones and, going through this and that as a, as a preteen and all of that stuff. But in retrospect, it's like, wow, I had PANS and nobody knew that from my undiagnosed Lyme disease.
And as we know, this happens every day, all
Yes.
day long, right?
Yep. But it wasn't until I was 35 and going through probably one of the most stressful times in my life that, kind of like the shit hit the fan. And I became symptomatic and I was forgetting words and I was waking up having panic attacks in the middle of the night and having insomnia and just all of these crazy, crazy symptoms. And thank God that I was doing what I was doing, and I was 5 years into my career because I went to my PCP and I was like, I have Lyme disease. And she was like, oh, no, you don't. You're climbing too many mountains and you're too stressed out. You're doing too much yoga. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Oh, she's like, oh, and you're going into early menopause. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So, anyways, long, long story short, I myself went through 18 months of triple antibiotic therapy, etomoqune, whether it was Malarone or Mepron, I did both, and all sorts of treatments, and my symptoms would completely go away, and then I'd stop the antimicrobials, and literally within weeks, all my symptoms would be back again, and I literally was to the point where like I could go to work and come home, and that was about it, and then I found master herbalist Stephen Buhner. And started corresponding with him and started doing his herbal protocols with myself while back on the antibiotics. and got better. And then I got to a point where I was able to stop the antibiotics while on the herbs and not relapse. And so then I started incorporating all of the herbs into my patients. So it's kind of like I was my own little guinea pig, right, in the beginning. Then I started using them with my patients, seeing better outcomes. And so I went through about a 5-year period where I was working with various Lyme literate physicians who were doing sort of like the pharmaceutical antibiotic piece, and I was doing the herbal piece. And then Steven Buhner put my name in his book, and I started getting all of these calls from people who only wanted to do herbs. Or I had people that were allergic to antibiotics, or like their liver enzymes went up, they couldn't stay on the antibiotics anymore. Long, long story short, I had these two groups of self-selected patients. And what I started to see was that the patients who were doing the herbs were actually becoming symptom-free and weaning off their herbal protocols and not relapsing around anywhere between year 1 and year 3, where I had patients who were rounding years 4, 5, and 6 on integrative treatment, still not able to get to the point where they could get off antibiotics. And then we had a handful of situations where it was like, this person got C. diff, or that person's liver enzymes went up, or they just couldn't deal with the antibiotics anymore. To them now be transitioning to the herbal only group, because that's all we could do, to all of a sudden start making gains and healing again. And so this was, gosh, this was about 10 years ago now. God, time flies. And this was when all the talk of the microbiome, right, and how the microbiome is crucial for the immune system, and you can't have a functioning immune system if you have dysbiosis and you don't have, all of these different species of healthy, good bacteria in your gut that are managing the inflammation and literally, in charge of our immune system. And one day I just went, holy shit, like, this is why. That was my aha light bulb moment where I'm like, you can't recover someone's immune system while they're on antibiotics, right? So that's what happened with me. I never fixed my immune system. So every time I stopped antibiotics, the infections just started to multiply again and come back. Because antibiotics are never going to get every last little straggler, right? You're going to hit a majority of them with the antibiotics, but you don't get every last one. It's the immune system that has to either get every last one and completely eradicate it, or the immune system that has to kind of like stop it from growing back, like force it into remission, keep it in its dormancy. And so once I had that aha moment, it was like, all right, we're doing herbs. We're doing herbs and only herbs. Unless it's acute, and unless they're not working for that particular patient. But I can count on one hand the number of times that I've referred out for antibiotics in a non-acute situation in the past probably 3 years.
Yeah, it and for me in the Lyme community on social media, I never dog it saying don't do it, but don't let it be your first option is what I feel, right? And I knew that earlier you said you're going to be very biased about antibiotics or herbals. But also hearing your story, I knew that you were the best person to share this because you did the antibiotics. Like you thought that that's what you were supposed to do. And so now clearly you had this whole mind shift, this whole aha moment, right? And that is where the herbals kind of took over your life, so to say, right?
That they literally have. Yes.
And I think it's so important because it's really scary when you're dealing with any type of a chronic illness, right? We're scared for our life, our family's scared for us, our spouses are scared for us, and it's really overwhelming and very confusing. And to not really know anything about it, like myself, I thought only dogs got Lyme disease. I mean, really? When we're uneducated and we don't know, and we're told that we have this chronic illness, it is scary and it is overwhelming, and we initially always want to go to what do we know? We know doctors, we know pharmaceuticals, and that's just what we know. And so I really think it's so important on this journey to really get curious and think outside the box. But most of all, educate yourself and become your own best advocate, because you need to be. Nobody else is going to be your better advocate for you than yourself. And so understand the choices that you're making and why you're making them, I think can be huge. Because when you go into this and you go into a protocol, if you're not in it to win it, if your mind is not there, right, it's just not probably going to happen. You know, our mind is so powerful, and the mindset we go into with the protocol, we have to really be in it to win it, because you cannot go into something for a month and then, I don't know, we're in football season right now, and bandwagon, right? And go on, no, let's quit this. I heard this is better. I heard, no, you
Yeah,
got
you
to give
can't
it
treatment hop. That's not.
treatment hop. There you go. Yeah, you just can't do it.
Yeah. I have
And
so
so
many
many do it.
patients that have done the bat, like they've done EBU, they've done ozone part of EBU, but like they've done even like plasmapheresis, or they've done hyperbaric oxygen, or they've tried doing this diet or that diet, and then they've taken herbs here, they've worked on detox over there, and it's like, you need a well-rounded, multifactorial protocol that's covering all of the treatment bases. And it's like, how do we come up with treatment bases? We understand how these organisms live and thrive and manipulate the body and the immune system. And once we understand what they're doing, we can put roadblocks in every single one of the paths that it uses to exploit our bodies, to make inflammation, to break the immune system, and to hide. So instead of just focusing on using any antimicrobial, whether it be herbal or pharmaceutical, to me, that's like 25% of the picture. We have to focus the other 75% of the picture on the individual, right? So, what's going on in their life? What's going on with their stress? What's going on in their mind? What's going on with their nervous system? Because I don't care how many antibiotics you take. If you are stuck in fight or flight, if you have dysautonomia, if your nervous system is in shut down screaming mode, it doesn't matter what anyone gives you to put in your mouth.
It
You're
truly
not going to get
doesn't.
better. So it's like we have to address everything in that one person. And then we have to look at the gut. We have to look at the brain. We have to look at all of the organs in the body. We have to do this detective work to figure out, because it's different in every person. There's a lot of commonalities, but every person has their different puzzle, right, of how their terrain has been affected from these organisms. And a lot of it goes back to whether it's genetics or whether it's previous injury, or antibiotic use or steroid use, or fill in the blank, right? So we have to deal with the person sitting in front of us, or if it's us, right? Since this is a patient focused thing, like you have to look at yourself and you have to do this full on investigation, and then the treatment has to be geared to help to heal your body. And for me, the utmost number one thing is to restore proper immune function, because you don't want to be on antimicrobials for the rest of your life, even if they're herbal, right? And I do believe that you can heal 100% from this thing. And I'm living proof of that. You
Yes, and
can,
me too.
yes, exactly.
And I'm glad that you just said that, because there's a lot of people that are in remission, but they'll continue to be on an herbal protocol forever. And right or wrong, don't know. I don't want to be. I don't take anything. I mentioned earlier I drink cistus tea. I drink it for multiple reasons, right? I went through breast cancer as well. I didn't do traditional treatment for that. So it's, Dr. Klinghart says drink enough of it and the ticks don't like you, right? So I drink it for a multitude of reasons. There's a lot of great properties in it. It's not because I'm doing a protocol for the rest of my life,
Right,
you know,
right.
and I think that
Yep.
there's a difference there to, you know, take things that support your body, your immune system. But no, Dr. Hinta, you and I, we are walking, talking proof that we can truly heal completely from this and be symptom free and not have to treat forever. And I think that that's important for the listeners to understand because we get scared into, well, we get a little bit of PTSD with this journey, I think, you
Yeah,
know, and
for
that's
sure.
another level I feel that we have to heal through in order to heal the whole mind, body, and soul, right? That is what needs to be done to fully get well and stay well.
I agree 100%.
Yes, and I love that you talk about the nervous system because I mean it's put in our body for a reason, right? Like, but we don't want to feel like we're being attacked all day long, and it's like flushing things down the toilet. If your nervous system is so fired and you're just dumping things into it, it's literally wasting time, money, energy, all of that,
Yeah,
because you've
all of
got to
it.
focus on the nervous system. And it's a hard piece to a lot of people's journey. So, but there's a lot of easy things that you can do to help support your nervous system at home, right? These are the little tips that I share on my page because we all need to know that we can support our bodies in some fashion on our own because that's part of empowering ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
So I could go on and on, and I know I want, if I could just ask you one last thing
Of
before we
course.
go, because I think that this is kind of almost a 101 of Lyme disease, I feel. And sometimes we have to get back to the basics, and a lot of people don't know the basics, right? Because they're going in every which direction and it's overwhelming. And so they just listen to what somebody tells them. So I think this is going to be a fabulous listen for many, many people out there. There are multiple co-infections that go along with Lyme, right? Like the three Bs is a big one, you know, Borrelia, Babesia, Bartonella. You've got Ehrlichia, Rickettsia, like the list goes on and on.
Right.
If you could just, and there's no one size fits all, right? Like we have these random symptoms and we get told that we have MS or Parkinson's or ALS or, you know, so it's not, but I know that there are some guidelines. If you could maybe pick a couple of these and list some of the symptoms that may lean in towards that category. Like I know a lot of people deal with air hunger and that
Sure.
is, you know, kind of where
Yes, you
they
want me to
relate to.
contrast
Yeah,
between,
just kind of break down a few if you can, right? And
yeah,
of
of
course, it's not
course.
for everybody, but just a little bit of a guideline.
Yep, absolutely. So we'll start with Babesia since you said air hunger.
Right.
So I'm going to hit the hallmark symptoms and know that they're different in every person. So, I would say technically, textbook, Babesia can cause anemia. Okay. It definitely likes to mess with the red blood cells because it's one of the places that it likes to live. So it definitely ends up messing around with iron metabolism, which can affect the body's ability to carry oxygen. So we end up with like being easily winded, shortness of breath. One of my symptoms was I would just be talking and I would run out of breath. And I'm like, how? I'm just talking at a normal speed and clip and volume. And like, how am I running out of breath? But like, that was one of my air hunger symptoms. There was a lot of sighing, a lot of using like accessory muscles to, to help to get a deep breath. A lot of like pressure headaches, tension headaches. Severe anxiety, panic attacks, chills, night sweats, insomnia, and mu more muscle pain than joint pain. And I know I'm forgetting some, but again, those are my big Babesia symptoms: the pressure headaches, the night sweats or chills, and like the shortness of breath, chronic cough, chest pain, rib pain, things like that, anxiety.
Perfect.
Contrasted with Bartonella, the Bartonella headache can be more like an ice pick or actually like a sinus headache. Bartonella has a lot of sensory issues. So, noise sensitivity, sound sensitivity, maybe chemical sensitivity, sensitivity even to touch. Okay. Like the sheet bothers you in bed. Bartonella often has more neuropsychiatric symptoms, then physical symptoms. So there can be this Bartonella rage, there can be this irritability, schizophrenia-like symptoms, anxiety, depression, seizures in some, also a lot of cognitive issues. Additionally, there's the striae rash, right? So we have the Bartonella cutaneous lesion marks that look like stretch marks. There can also be like these strange, peculiar nodules on the extremities. And then a lot of GI symptoms, a lot of GI symptoms when it comes to Bartonella. And then also pain in the soles of your feet or shin bone pain. Those are my classics for Bartonella. And then for Lyme, Lyme's tricky because Lyme, so like Babesia primarily lives in the red blood vessel, sorry, in the red blood cell, in the blood vessel, the liver, and the spleen. That's, you know, I mean, it can live everywhere. It is everywhere, but those are its major areas that it loves. Bart loves the blood vessels, and Bart actually manipulates our physiology to make more blood vessels so it has more area to live. How smart is it, right? And so, spider veins, another, you know, broken capillaries, something that you'll see with Bartonella. So it loves the vasculature system and the endothelial cells of the body. Lyme, mostly it likes the extracellular matrix, the joints, ligaments, tendons. It wants to be away from the bloodstream if we're talking about regular Lyme, not tick-borne relapsing fever. Kind of going off on a tangent, but I'm trying to prove my point. Like Lyme can cause any symptom in any organ, again, because it's infecting all of the cells of the body. And it will prey on your weaknesses, whether it's a previous injury or it's just your weak organ because of genetics or, you know, previous health history, right? And so the thing with Lyme is that a lot of times you will see multi-systemic symptoms at once. So you kind of feel like your whole body's breaking down, including your brain. And symptoms come and go. They migrate around the body in sort of like a cyclical pattern. And typically you will have worsening immune impairment. So you start feeling like you're catching everything from everyone. And you might even feel like you're starting to get the flu all the time, but then you don't. You can have chronic sore throats. A lot of times you will not respond the way that your physician expects you to a certain medication or treatment or therapy. That's a huge red flag. But I mean, really, all the symptoms of Lyme are so different and so in so many different people.
Yeah, they are. Gosh, you just brought me down memory lane a little bit. I think I had everything that you just mentioned. I'm one of the
Yeah.
overachievers, right?
Same.
Wow. Oh my gosh, Dr. Hinchey, this was truly fabulous. Absolutely packed full of such great information and the basics and diving into chronic. And I so appreciate you. So appreciate you. And for the listeners, as always, I will put links to everything that we talked about, the website you can reach out. I know that you do some telehealth in some states. The information will be in the description of this episode. And as well as with your Lyme Core Botanicals, you do not have to be a patient to be able to purchase these from her site. So that is always a big bonus as well. So again, all the information will be in the description of this episode. Dr. Hinchey, always great to have you. You know I'm going to reach back out next year, right?
Of course, I'd be honored. I love talking to you.
I appreciate you so, so much. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.